Welcome in, everyone, to another episode of the Real Estate Tax Playbook. As always, I'm your host, Evan Ross. I'm a tax director with Brown Edwards & Company based out of our Roanoke, Virginia office location. If you have not already familiarized yourself with Brown Edwards, please feel free to check out our website at your convenience. A link to the website can be found in the description of this podcast. On the website, you'll find more information on our service lines, service providers, and our office locations throughout Virginia, West Virginia, and Tennessee. And just a side note, we did just add our 13th office at the firm in Virginia Beach. That was effective November 1st. So you'll see that on the website as well as an additional office location we have at Brown Edwards. With that, I'd like to introduce our guest for today, an actual second-time guest of the podcast, Jacob Favreau out of Richmond, Virginia with Brown Edwards & Company. Jacob, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me again.
Yep. I guess the first one went well, so good enough for us to bring you back again. So we appreciate the content last year towards year-end planning.
Yeah, I think this will be a little bit of an addendum to that because last year we talked about each candidate's tax plans and kind of compare that if you want to listen to last year's again, but compare it to what actually came out in the bill most recently.
Definitely. Yep. A lot has changed. Again, last year, we were looking at kind of both sides of what could happen. Now we've got an enacted law. So we're going to talk through that a little bit today. So with that, I like to start off every episode as of about 3-4 months ago with this segment called Tell Me More. So for you, holiday plans, the holidays are coming up. What do you have going on for the holidays this year?
This year, for the first time in several years, we're actually going to be hosting at our house. We're hosting some family members. Some will be coming up from Miami, Atlanta, and down from a little bit northern Virginia. We got family members coming from up and down the East Coast a little bit, and I think we'll have 25 to 30 people in total coming.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah, I've hosted a few times for the holidays in the past, so good for you. Wish you the best of luck. Are they staying with you or?
No, we're just hosting on the holiday itself. Okay. And everybody's bringing a side dish, so we don't have to do all the cooking. We're just doing the main dish. So.
Nice. That makes it a lot easier on you not having to do all the prep work and the cleanup and all that kind of stuff. Got family members helping you out. So awesome. Well, I hope your holidays go well.
Same to you.
With that, let's go ahead and get into the content for today. We kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier, but we're going to do some year-end tax planning, kind of hit on the hot topics with OB3, the One Big Beautiful Bill that came into law on July 4th of this year. So let's get, right into it. I wanted to kind of highlight some of the larger items, if that's okay with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So a big one, biggest one for me, I do a lot of real estate, as you know, you do some as well, but bonus depreciation, that's huge. So you mind just speaking a little bit on depreciation, what that looks like with the tax law change?
Yeah. I think that's probably the biggest one that will hit a variety of industries, most likely the real estate clients as well. The biggest piece of that is without this bill being enacted, bonus depreciation would have essentially gone away for 2026. 2025 would have been 40% bonus depreciation, which is a large step down from when it used to be 100%. And with the new bill, it basically has all qualifying property where you can use bonus depreciation and take 100% bonus in the year that it was placed in service. As long as it's after January 19th, I believe was the date, you can have 100% bonus depreciation on qualifying property, not long-term real estate like building structures, but pretty much everything else in between.
Great. Yeah, that's wonderful. And I guess that period, that first part of January, are you subject to the old rules during that period?
Yeah, so it would be what the rule would have been for 25, so the 40% bonus. Okay.
That's good to note. If you did have any assets that were placed in a service that would qualify for bonus depreciation, you would be subject to that 40% limitation, not the 100% limitation that is now in effect. So thanks for clarifying on that piece.
Yeah, and also a little bit of clarification. You have to elect out of the 100% bonus and into the 40% bonus. You could do that as well if you wanted to do that for the full year. But I have some elections that you can pick from, but for the most part, it's taxpayer friendly where most clients would do the 100% bonus depreciation.
Very good. Yeah, I know a lot of my clients, especially in the real estate, if they're doing cost segregation, they're probably going to be chomping at the bit to take advantage of this new law on the 100% versus the 40% that we were looking at for tax year 2025. In addition, so we talked about 168K a little bit. 179, that's still around, correct?
Yes, one section 179 is different than 168K. One good thing about that, if you can use the section 179, there's no Virginia add back. So if you're a Virginia-based business, there's no need to add back any depreciation because usually Virginia will not conform to the bonus depreciation that federal mandates. So the section 179 is still in place, and the limits on that have increased pretty substantially to what you can expense for the current year.
Okay, so yeah, all around, it sounds like depreciation, it's back better than ever, as good as it's ever been for taxpayers.
Yeah, so it went from $1.25 million in 2024, and it's $2.5 million for 2025 right now, as far as what you can expense.
That's 179, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. Thanks for clarifying that. So what are you in your meetings with your clients, are a lot of them looking to take advantage? Are they trying to acquire more property towards the end of the year to take advantage of this? What are you suggesting or seeing?
Yeah. I've had a lot of meetings recently within the past 2 weeks or so. And another industry it's impacting quite a bit is manufacturing, because there are a lot of manufacturing clients putting new equipment into service, and equipment is a 5-year property. So a lot of those companies are using Section 179 for some of the new equipment that they put into service. And like I said a few minutes ago, the $2.5 million is quite a bit higher than it used to be for prior years.
Next, I mean, moving on from depreciation, sounds like there's a lot of benefits there, a lot that taxpayers can take advantage of, especially within real estate and manufacturing industries, between 180K and 179 depreciation options. R&D is another topic with the Inflation Reduction Act. There were some changes there. So can you kind of speak on what changed with research and development expenses from the Inflation Reduction Act to what we have now?
Yeah, so a little bit of history on that. So prior to the tax years ending in 2022, or beginning in January of 22, I should say, prior to that, the research and development costs that you were using for credits did not really have to be added back to taxable income. In 2022, the law changed that, where you had to add back essentially the R&D costs plus some other related costs. There's a little bit of different definition for the research and development costs versus what's called 174D. But for the most part, your R&D costs had to be added back to your taxable income. You couldn't deduct those in the year that they were incurred. So you would capitalize them and expense them over 5 years. So if you had $100,000 of R&D costs in 1 year for 2022 through 2024, all three of those years were the same. If you had $100,000 in costs, you had to add that back to taxable income. You would amortize it over 5 years as long as they were U.S.-based costs. And so you would get a $20,000 deduction per year. That was the rule from 2022 through 2024. And then under OB3, the law changed back to what it was prior, so you don't have to add those back. As long as you're a qualifying taxpayer, applying small business taxpayer, you can go back and amend 2022 through 2024 to remove that addition off of the books and still take the credit. Or you could expense the remaining unamortized costs that you've had for those 3 years during 2025. Or the last option is you can elect to expense those unamortized costs evenly over 2025 and 2026. So if you had $1 million of unamortized costs at the end of 24, that last option would allow you to do $500,000 deduction in 25 and 500 in 26.
Did you see a lot of clients going back and amending, or are you suggesting most of your clients go ahead and expense in tax year 25?
It all depends on the client. Actually, was working on one today. They're going back and amending the 3 years. So if you amend and you're a flow-through entity, you have to amend the partnership or S-corp return, as well as all the individual or shareholders, the owners of those companies as well. So it could be multiple amended returns over multiple years. So you have to kind of factor that into that cost of amending into your decision. But I've seen probably a 50-50 split. Half of are trying to amend, and then half are going to either deduct fully in 2025. I haven't seen one yet that's going to elect over the 2-year election.
I saw that option out there, but I'm like, I don't know why you'd wait the other year to spread it. I would think you'd want to utilize it all in 2025 would be my thought, that what I'm suggesting.
The only reason you might elect to do over the 2 years is if it if it takes you down into a really low tax bracket. And if you split it up over the 2 years, you're maximizing your tax brackets that you're using in.
Yeah, I guess that can make sense. I haven't seen that scenario yet, but that would make sense. You were speaking on, sounds like we were talking about domestic R&D cost. Foreign cost, what does that look like? Are we still under the old rules? What has to happen
there?
Under the old
rule, yeah. You still add those back and you amortize those over the 15 years.
Okay. Perfect. So this is good news for taxpayers. I wish they would have not had this lull period from 2022 through 2024. Just created more work, I think, for us and taxpayers as well.
Mm-hmm. I agree. The last 3 years, especially 2022, when we were preparing those returns, the 2023 tax season seemed to go on forever because we were hopeful that it would get repealed, but it never did.
Yep.
So when we filed the 23 and 24 returns, we never really had to wait for that. But 22 tax season seemed to go forever.
It definitely did. And I had one actually come up, a new client this past summer. They were looking to go back and amend and kind of correct. So they had some foreign and domestic R&D expenses. They were looking to go amend. I said, hey, well, I think we're going to have to hold off because we don't know what's going to happen with this tax law. So we ended up waiting through July 4th. Fortunately, the domestic, they had a fix on that, but the foreign still needed to be capitalized and amortized over that 15-year period. Create a little bit of a headache, especially that first year. So appreciate you sharing that on the R&D. So it sounds like good news, both for our depreciation perspective and the R&D perspective is what I'm hearing from you.
Yeah, both of those are taxpayer friendly for sure. Yes.
Okay. So another less tax friendly provision in this new tax law, OB3, is related to charitable contributions, specifically to individuals. So there's a lot of tax planning opportunity there. Can you speak on what those changes are? What opportunities are there for tax planning?
Yeah. So this is actually a big topic right now for year end because charitable donations starting in 2026 are taking a little bit of a haircut. So for 2025, the same rules apply as always as what they have been. So you can deduct up to 60% of your adjusted gross income for cash contributions and 30% for capital gain contributions, like contribution of stock into a donor advised fund or to contribution of stock to a 501c3 entity. So those are all the same for 2025. Starting in 2026, there's a couple of different limitations. The biggest one, you have to clear 0.5% of your adjusted gross income before any of those charitable donations are deductible. And then so if 0.5% of 1% of your gross income is $100,000, the first $100,000 of your charitable donations would not be deductible currently, but they can be carried forward as long as you exceed that 0.5%. So that is a little bit not taxpayer friendly. So we're suggesting some clients accelerate their donations that they may make for 26 into 2025, just so they won't have to take the haircut. Another impact there is just related to general itemized deductions. And so I'm not exactly sure what year it was when there was something called the PEAS limitation that went away with TCJA back in 2017. I don't know what year it started, but essentially total itemized deductions are also going to be limited for higher income taxpayers. So if you're in the top income tax bracket, basically, they're going to limit your itemized deductions to be the equivalent of a deduction if you're in the 35% bracket. So they take 2/30 of the amount over 35% top end of the 35% bracket, and then that is your reduction of your total itemized deductions to get those equal to 35% tax deductible rate of your itemized deductions. It's a complicated calculation and a lot to say. But essentially, they're limiting higher income taxpayers to a 35% deduction for their itemized deductions.
That's great. Thanks for sharing that. I mean, and that's just another reason that, I mean, if you do have a lot of charitable contributions or your tax situation is more complicated, to be working with a professional, because we are the ones in the weeds of this stuff and have an understanding of what needs to be done, what the limitations are, how those calculations work.
Yeah. When I first saw the 230 percentage, I was trying to figure out where exactly that came from. And then upon some research, the 2% difference in the top rate and the rate just below it. And then the top rate is 37%. So that's essentially the calculation to get to it. It seems like a weird number, but there was some thought behind it, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was the same way when I first looked at it. I was like, where that, what does this factor coming from.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, we figured it out at this point. The charitable contributions, I'm definitely suggesting front loading some of those contributions into tax year 2025. If you're going to give funds anyways, is what it sounds like taxpayers, a lot of them need to do.
Yeah, especially if you're in the highest tax bracket, for sure. And even if you're not in the highest tax bracket, doing that in 2025 saves you from having a haircut next year on those.
Yep, definitely agree. I mean, and this is just for itemizers, correct? Is there any benefit for non-itemizers related to charitable contributions?
If you're not itemizing, you can still deduct some charitable contributions. That amount is $1,000 if you're single and $2,000 if you're married filing joint.
Okay.
So, and you don't have to itemize to be able to take that.
That's right. So yeah, there's some, we had a short period during COVID where I think there was a smaller amount of charitable contributions you could still deduct.
Three or six.
So kind of along the same lines there for those non-itemizers that are taking a standard deduction. So there's still, if you're giving a charity, you still get something out of it. You're not going to get necessarily full bang for your buck, but up to that $1,000 or $2,000, you get an additional deductions. Thanks for sharing that. Unfortunately, that is one of those things. In order to make these bills work, it can't be all good for taxpayers. So this is one of those provisions.
Got to be balanced a little bit.
Yep, exactly right. Moving along, I think another one that impacts a lot of individuals is the salt cap change. So what does that look like now? I know a lot of people were frustrated about that when it got moved down to 10,000 years ago.
Yeah. So also with the TCJA back in 2017, that limited your deduction for taxes as an itemized deduction to $10,000. And that's a combination of your real estate taxes, your personal property taxes on vehicles, and your state income taxes paid is what makes up that bucket. So back in 2017, that was limited to $10,000 per taxpayer or per joint return. With the new act, the cap is raised to $40,000. However, if your adjusted gross income is over a certain level, that cap starts to get reduced. So it starts getting reduced once your adjusted gross income is at $500,000. So there's a reduction that comes into play. But for every, I think it's every $1,000 you're over the $500,000, it's reduced by 30%. So it will go back down to $10,000 if your income is high enough. So there's a phase out calculation that you'd have to do.
As with most tax provisions, there's some type of phase out period. Not everyone is going to be eligible for those deductions. So that's great. Obviously, as a workaround, we started using PT regimes. Are those still around, still an option for taxpayers?
Yeah, those are still an option. Those are still a year-by-year election. You don't have to do it if you don't want to. So PTET or pass-through entity tax is an election that you can make at a pass-through entity level, so either a partnership or an S-corp tax return. And that, as I said, it's an annual election. And that election allows the entity to pay the Virginia tax, get a federal deduction at the entity level, and then the credit itself flows through to the individuals. So that is also a workaround. With the new cap here being $40,000, if the owners are falling into that, it might be a little bit easier to not do the PTET if they're still getting the deduction anyway. Although that said, with the potential reduction of some of your itemized deductions and everything else, more than likely, it'll still make sense to do the PTET in most cases.
That's what I was going to ask. I was going to say, with this change, do you expect less of your clients to be making that election?
I doubt it. It's something we'll look at for sure, but I'd say 99%, it's not going to change the answer.
Yeah,
for
I would agree. That's the same scenario I'm looking at. That it's still, if they've been making the election in the past, it probably makes sense. They've gotten used to it, to paying those taxes at the entity level. It's not hurting anything by doing that.
Right.
So,
right.
That's what I'm seeing from that perspective. So, and we were talking about, I guess you spoke on Virginia. There's other states that also have PTET, pass-through entity tax elections you can make as well.
Oh yeah. I forget the exact number, but I think it's in the mid to high 50s that have some sort of pass-through entity tax as an election. And it's just a state by state basis you have to look at. And essentially they all work the same, where you get a federal deduction for the state taxes paid at the entity level, with the credit flowing through to the individual.
Yep. Thanks for clarifying that there are other states. It's not just Virginia that has that PTET regime in place. So last item I kind of wanted to speak on today, this is the one I personally have gotten the most questions on for one reason or another, but it's tips and overtime. So do you mind just speaking on that? I don't know what the reason is. I guess it's just this affects so many employers and their employees. But what's been your experience there? And can you talk about just the rules related to tips and overtime?
I'd say most of my questions that I've been receiving on that are at the employer level, not the actual recipient of the tips or overtime. So it's a matter of tracking internally. Not that you weren't tracking already, but it's basically W-2s are going to look different for the ones that the employers file now. So on the W-2, it'll have an area for overtime now. It already has the tip amount in there, but now there's going to be a new box for overtime. So as an individual, if you have overtime pay or tip pay, there is a potential where $25,000 of qualified tip income can be deducted from your income. So if your total W-2 income was $100,000, of which $25,000 was tips, so that's already in the 100. So you have $100,000 gross income, but then you can take a deduction potentially for up to $25,000. As most things have, there's some phase outs according to those rules. With the phase out range for tips, it starts at $300,000 and it ends at $550,000. So if your income's over $550,000, you'd be fully phased out of any deduction for tips. And then if you're single, it's $150,000 and it's $400,000 is the cap where it would be fully phased out. Similar rules for overtime. The deduction is $25,000 that you can deduct if you're joint. If you're single, it's $12,500. Same phase out numbers as the tip. Awesome. So it's just a different thing that you'll see on your W-2 if you do have overtime pay. Just another thing you have to look at when filing your return for 2025.
And just to clarify, so I mean, the W-2 is still going to be the gross amount you're paid, correct?
Yes. Yeah. So box one will still have the gross amount like it always has. And then you'll have different boxes underneath of that, which will break out tips. There's already a box for tips. And then there's going to be another box for overtime.
With it being kind of late in the year, I mean, we're already into December at this point in time. Is there any relief from the IRS? You said the new W-2s. Is there any relief for 2025 if they're trying to figure out how to produce that overtime information, how to get that to your employees? Is there any relief out there?
That's a good question.
Okay.
Is there a relief?
I think for 2025, my understanding is that there is relief, that it's just any means necessary to produce that information to your employees. And then in 2026, you are going to be required to use that box 12 or box 14 to report and use the correct code to report the overtime and tips.
Because they might not have had it all correctly coded prior to July 4th then.
Well, anyways, Jacob, I appreciate your time today. Anything else you want to share for taxpayers as they're going through this tax planning phase this month of the year, trying to get things done before December 31st? Anything else that is pressing that they should be considering from a tax perspective?
One other thing we didn't touch on is 529 expenses. So if you have kids in K-12 and you fund the tuition with 529 plans, the old limit was $10,000 that you could pull out per kid. That has increased to $20,000. So if you have any private school tuition that you need to reimburse yourself for or whatever, pull that out of the 529 and you can do up to $20,000 per kid this year.
Yeah, that's great. So my kids are not in private school, but I know tuition for the private schools is pretty pricey. Mm-hmm. So I think it makes sense that number has been increased up to $20,000 per child.
Yeah, agreed. And then I think we touched on all the other bigger items out of the bill. The biggest one, the first two we talked about are definitely going to be the largest ones for most of our clients.
Yeah, there's a lot in there, but I just wanted to kind of hit on the key topics for today's episode, kind of keep it short and sweet, provide that information to our listeners out there. So Jacob, appreciate you coming on again today for the second time. Do you mind? I know you shared your contact information last episode. Do you mind doing that again for our listeners out there?
Sure. My email is the letter J, my last name Favaro, which is Favaro at BECPAS.com. And my direct dial for telephone is 804-601-7052.
Thanks, Jacob. Well, again, I appreciate you coming on today. With that, that's a wrap for this episode of the Real Estate Tax Playbook. There's our last one for calendar year 2025. I appreciate everyone coming in, tuning in to the episode. Again, feel free to share this podcast with your friends, family, colleagues. Make sure you download, subscribe wherever you get your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other streaming platforms. We will be back at the beginning of 2026 with new content. I hope everyone out there has a safe and happy holidays and New Year's. We'll get back to you in 2026.